Chair Corcoran, members of the committee, Senate Bills 354 appropriates money to the Oregon Department of Administrative Services for the construction of permanent toilet and lavatory facilities on the Capitol Mall. It prohibits the department from erecting and maintaining temporary toilet and lavatory facilities on the mall except as required by law and declares an emergency effective July 1, 2003. Senate Bill 566 directs the Legislative Administration Committee to apply for a grant from the Cultural Development Grant Program for constructing and installing refurbishing lights, skylights over the state capitol stairwells. It declares an emergency effective July 1, 2003.
Senator Atkinson, this bill appears ahead of its time. Why don't you come on up here and tell us about it, both these wonderful bills.
Yes, sir.
And then we'll move these wonderful bills as soon as we have a quorum. But we don't have Senator Minnis today.
Well, I'm gathering my evidence.
And we especially want you to note the biological condition that causes there to be an emergency clause on the first bill.
Yes, sir.
You're not nervous at all about presenting on these bills, are you, Senator?
I got my nervousness out with you last week.
Okay. We don't want to make anybody nervous in this process. That wouldn't be like us.
For the record, Jason Atkinson, State Senator, District 2, Jackson, Josephine Counties. Mr. Chair, where would you like me to talk to both at once? Is
sure.
That what your intent was?
Yes, sir.
Well, first, Mr. Chairman, let me tell you how both of these bills originated. I don't know if we talked about this last week, but I have a longstanding interest in history and in the Capitol building itself. And this interest has led me to not only to study the building and its architecture, but also be led with the facility services on several of the maintenance needs of the building, which have turned not only to be an interest of mine, but also have Herb has been very supportive to have some ballast replaced inside of the rotunda area, which makes it more historically accurate, and do some other repair things around the building to make this more attractive. I believe that this is the people's building, and I believe that the people's building should be maintained and taken care of and should look nice. And the bills that are before you, even though I realize require some public some editorial chafe to come my way as a result of introducing them, I do believe that both of these things should be attended to because, quite frankly, one of them is wrong and the other one is ugly. And so on those, I would turn your attention and anybody watching to the pictures that I've displayed to you.
Senator?
Sure, I will. The first two pictures, Mr. Chair, are ugly. And if you would look at them, one is of the porta-potties outside on the mall, which I would have taken an informal survey with these and asked how many people knew that they were out there. And most people have not known that they were there, because they're used to them, which you'll see in the next example. They were put there originally, temporarily, for kids who play in the fountain in the summertime. Instead of coming into the Capitol building dripping wet, they had a place to go. Unfortunately, that temporariness has been permanent. They've been there ever since I've been here, And oftentimes our school buses come up and whatnot, and the first thing that they see of Oregon government is porta potties. Now, editorial comments as they may be, I just think that they should be removed. I've talked to the Senate president, who has an interest not only in the building but also the Capitol Foundation, and his only caveat of his marginal support, however not public, for the measures would be to make sure that we allow them to be there for the hoops that are the hoop tournament that is played on the Capitol. But anyway, as you'll see, there's also a referring to this particular measure, an amendment that I don't want taxpayer or budget general fund dollars going to fix this problem. First of all, on this particular measure, I would like them to be removed. But more importantly, I think this is a perfect opportunity for us to use the cultural trust to its fullest advantage to protect the culture of Oregon by getting rid of these eyesores on the Capitol Mall. That's the first measure. The second measure has a similar amendment, but I will draw you to some other pictures. If you'll turn to the third picture. The third picture is this one, which refers to the skylights. This was pointed out to me by two people. One, Herb Culm, who pointed this out to me 2 years ago, and the other one was by reading an excerpt from Senator Mark Hatfield, who used to give give tours of the new Capitol building when this place was new in 1936. And he said that the stairwells, the two original stairwells of our Capitol, would glow. And they glowed for two reasons. Number one, natural light came down through these stairwells. And if you look on the supporting pictures thereafter, you'll notice this one is light going all the way through, from the skylight to the basement, and the other two, which are the brass. And the reason why these would glow is because natural light would come down, reflect off the brass, and that gave the architectural ambience that the architect had originally designed this for.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator,
yes,
so does this mean that those committee meetings down at the Senator Hotel had nothing to do with the glow?
I don't know if I have the historic background to answer that with any detail.
Okay, thank you.
However, you will know, Mr. Chair, because I took you, Friday, Senator Corcoran, Senator Burdick, I think I've got to about 20 members of the Senate so far, and pointed this out to them. And like the porta potties, people say, I didn't know it was like this. And the brass, if you'll see from this picture, these things are brass, but the patina on them is almost black. They're supposed to glow. They have not been polished. Well, I don't even think I was on the face of the earth the last time that they were polished. And so what this bill seeks to do is restore not only skylights but also the brass using the cultural trust. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be more than happy to answer questions or take the general ribbing that I knew is due me.
No, the ribbing won't occur until this bill's on the floor and you're carrying it. But we are lacking a quorum to move the bill. But it's your intention to move amendments to both 354 and 566?
Yes, sir.
And move them to Ways and Means with the due pass?
Sure.
Okay.
This, as I told you, Mr. Chairman, is not the most important bill that we're going to do. But I do think that it is important in the sense that this is the people's building and we don't maintain it. This new room that we're in has just been reconfigured, I guess putting that aside. We don't maintain the place. And I think that's a terrible thing.
Thank you.
A couple questions, Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
Thank you. Senator Atkinson, we had a hearing in our health policy committee about exercise and going up and down stairwells, and I was assigned ad hoc to the stairwell committee to get members to start using the stairwells. Probably one of the reasons they're not excited about it is because the brass doesn't shine. I don't know, but I do enjoy the stairwells. The question I have is, how do you define a toilet as a work of art? Qualify under the cultural trust?
Well, I don't define that as a work of art. As you'll remember from my, Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, from my opening, I said one was ugly and one is a work of art, which the second being the skylights, the brass being a work of art. But I do think as a receptacle for something that all Oregonians are supposed to share, which is the intent of the cultural trust to protect it, I think our mall area qualifies. If you look in the picture that I provided, there's those squares that tell essentially the story of Oregon. It tells all the things about Oregon, the state flower, the state fish, the state tree, the initiation 1919 of the initiative process, all the counties, county seats. That's the story of Oregon. This is our culture, and quite honestly, it could be prettier. So I think it falls within.
A state honey bucket?
Well, I think it's Buck's Sanitary Service.
Oh, okay.
To be honest with you, Mr. Chair, I thought that when I would write this bill that I would get a huge fiscal, and then I would go out there and measure the square footage of both of these honey buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could put a square footage amount, which I'm sure would be great fodder for the Willamette Week. However, no such fiscal exists. And
you say these were around since Speaker Campbell was Speaker. Is that when this started?
Well, I hear him back there laughing. I'm sure he could come up here and comment on them. But I believe they've been here so much, and the brass has not been polished in so long that people are used to it. That's the bottom line.
Senator Walker, you had another question?
Yeah, I did. I'm glad we share the same sense of preserving history. Ever since I've been elected since 99, I've wanted to have a miniature golf tournament in the Capitol as a fundraiser to raise money for the Capitol Foundation to upkeep this building, put some lighting on some of these gubernatorial photos, paintings in the hallway. So if this doesn't pass, maybe you'd like to help me with an indoor putting tournament to raise money.
Well, I'm sure that would be very good for the murals to be better lit, Senator Walker. However, it was my original intention in writing this bill that all freshman House members polish the brass to save the cash. But yeah, that idea didn't exactly.
We worked on this one. We've got it down to the Senate, and Senator Morris is going to join them. He doesn't know that yet. Well, thank you, Senator.
But anyway, I think it's important. Thank you for having a hearing.
Any other questions? Senator Starr, do you want to take your licks?
No. I'm,
no? Oh, okay. You're being a paragon of Christian virtue today?
Absolutely.
I see. Okay. Okay, you're dismissed. It's been a pleasure seeing you.
Twice in a day.
You've got too much time on your hands down in Jacksonville, sir, I do have to say.
Actually,
come up with bills like this.
Actually, the city of Jacksonville is one of 9 towns in America where the entire town's on the historic register, so this is all we do down there.
Mm-hmm. And do you have honey buckets in Jacksonville?
No.
No. You have real bathrooms.
That's right.
You have stalls for the horses and stuff too, or no?
Just a general tie-in post.
I see. Okay.
I'm sorry.
We better not go too far along that course.
I'll save it for the floor.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. All right, we're going to close the public hearing, open the work session on Senate Bill 354.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
I'll move the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 354.
Senator Walker moves the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 354. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
And, Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
I'll move Senate Bill 354 as amended to Ways and Means. Is that where we're going?
Correct.
And wish them well.
Senate Bill 354 as amended to Ways and Means with the DuPass recommendation. Any discussion?
Just
Senator Starr.
I apologize for coming in late, but the blank on line 6, that addressed the amendment?
The amendment, essentially, I think what Senator Atkinson wanted to do was take it out of the general fund as a general fund request and ask Ways and Means to fund it through another mechanism, maybe the Cultural Trust.
So the blank that's on the bill will be filled in Ways and Means?
That would be, although this is out of the general fund, so I actually think that that will probably be amended out, and we'll be looking instead at the Cultural Trust or one of those committees to try to get the funding through other funds.
So, to answer the question, the blank is still in the bill?
The blank is still in the bill currently.
And it's going to Ways and Means?
That's correct.
Very good.
I want to double check that and make sure that there's no removal of line 6.
Doesn't look like it to me.
Doesn't look like
the
it.
Amendment.
No, it doesn't look like it.
Okay.
Okay. Ms. Gravel, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Aye.
Senator Walker? Aye.
Aye. So, Senate Bill 354 is amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Close the work session on that and open a work session on Senate Bill 566.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
I'll move Senate Bill, the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 566.
Senator Walker moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 566. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
I will move Senate Bill 566 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker moves Senate Bill 566 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Ms. Gravel, we call the roll, please.
Senator Scott?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator
Walker? Aye. Senate Bill 566 as amended to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Close the work session on Senate Bill 566. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2317. Would you explain what that does, please, Mr. Ellsworth?
Chair Corcoran, members of the committee, House Bill 2317 eliminates the redundant provisions in the statute prescribing membership of the Capital Planning Commission. It increases the number of commission members appointed by the governor from 3 to 4 and reduces the number appointed by the Department of Administrative Services from 2 to 1. The amendment stipulates that of the 4 commission members appointed by the governor, that the additional member be a public sector appointment from the Salem area.
Thank you very much. I do not have a witness registration sheet. 2317, we have Lori Warner, please. Ms. Warner?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lori Warner. I'm the Facilities Division Administrator for Department of Administrative Services, and we propose this amendment to the bill in order to retain the balance that's currently on the commission.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions. I think we discussed this last time the bill was up in this committee.
Okay. And there's no amendments. The 23, did we already amend in the dash ones?
No, we... Yes. No, the amendment is there in front of you.
Okay. Right. Anybody else wanting to testify in public session? Okay, we'll close the public hearing, open work session on House Bill 2317. Do I hear a motion to add the dash one amendments,
yes,
please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll
Senator Walker.
Dash one amendments to House Bill 2317.
Senator Walker moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 2317. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none. So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Walker.
I'll move House Bill 2317 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker moves House Bill 2317-1, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, would you please call the roll, Ms. Gravel?
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2317 is on its way to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any volunteers to carry this? I'll carry it. We're done. Now, we will open public hearing on Senate Bill 830. Mr. Ellsworth.
Senate Bill 830 requires an owner of a greyhound used in race meets in the state to file a form with the Oregon Racing Commission upon disposition of the greyhound. The measure specifies information to be included on the form. The measure creates a crime of failure to file valid greyhound disposition form, punishable by a maximum of a $2,500 fine. The measure also creates a crime of aggravated failure to file a valid greyhound disposition form, punishable by a maximum of 1 year's imprisonment, $5,000 fine, or both. The measure requires commission veterinarian for race meet to report to commission on injury incurred by greyhound while participating in race. specifies information to be included in report, excludes good animal husbandry practices from a definition of injury. The measure creates a crime of failure to file valid greyhound injury report, punishable by maximum $2,500 fine, creates crime of an aggravated failure to file a valid greyhound injury report, punishable by maximum of 1 year's imprisonment, $5,000 fine, or both.
Thank you very much. Senator Walker, you want to lead off here, and then we'll have Connie Teal and Penny
Trulin
to testify in support, and then we have a couple of folks in opposition.
Yeah, if they could, Connie and Penny could come up and testify with me.
Sure.
Time, that'd be great.
Thank you. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Vicki Walker, State Senator from District 7. This is a bill that I've co-sponsored with Senator Charles Starr and numerous other senators and representatives. Our goal here is to track the disposition of greyhound racing dogs. This bill is patterned after a similar bill in the state of Massachusetts that passed in 2001. I contacted their racing commission this morning, spoke with their racing commissioner, Mr. Breton, and he indicated to me they've had no problems with their bill, but actually it did not cost any money, didn't cost extra staff time, and it was something that was important to the to track the dogs, and the organization Grey 2K helped them revamp the form, and so far they're happy with the administration of the form and tracking the animals. What we're trying to do, and I'll have the two ladies sitting to my right talk to you about what we're trying to do and why. It's not an onerous requirement on the commission at all, and we'll hear testimony, I suspect, from the commission, and I'll ask some questions about some of their previous practices in tracking things and investigating things in their department. But I think this is a good place for us to start and end with making sure we know where these dogs are going and what's happening to them. I'm not opposed to dog racing. That's not what this is about. This is about making sure that we know what's happening to these dogs and where they're going, because unlike Oregon has a relatively clean record, but there are situations that we've had problems, but some of the other states are more severe problems, and those animals do come here. And I'll let the ladies to my right explain to you about the need for this.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Penny Trulin. I'm a volunteer with an organization called Oregon Defenders of Greyhounds. I'm very grateful to have an opportunity to testify before your committee today and appreciate you scheduling us. I have written testimony that I'm not sure of the protocol.
That's why we have senators around. They can deliver
okay.
them to the staff.
But I will let you read that testimony on your own time. I will just speak to you today to highlight a few points briefly. I strongly urge you to support Senate Bill 830 relating to greyhound racing. As you all know, greyhound racing is part of the gambling industry in Oregon. It is licensed and regulated by the state. Each year, approximately 1,000 dogs race at the Oregon racetrack. At the end of the season, about 200 of those dogs are adopted out. Oregon has three very capable adoption agencies working hard to meet that goal of adopting out as many dogs as possible. The problem is that we don't know what happens to the remaining 800 or so dogs. Senate Bill 830, as Senator Walker explained, would require greyhound owners to fill out forms specifying the disposition of each greyhound dog at the end of the racing season. It would also require the racetrack vet to complete injury reports on dogs that are injured while racing at the track. The Oregon Racing Commission, which regulates dog and horse racing in Oregon, has a rule already in place that requires kennel operators to notify the commission as to the disposition of race dogs. The problem is that the public doesn't know what, if any, information is collected and maintained by the commission. Under Oregon's public records law, section 192.502, information submitted to a public body, such as the commission, in confidence and not otherwise required by law, is exempt from disclosure. We believe this is a loophole in the law that needs to be closed, and we believe that Senate Bill 830 is a simple way to close that loophole. The disposition reporting requirements need to be a state law. It cannot depend upon rules enacted by the Oregon Racing Commission. There is a clear precedent for this bill. Of the 16 states in the United States that allow dog racing, 8 already require this specific kind of record keeping. Oregon is the only state west of the Mississippi that does not make this information available to the public. Senate Bill 830 offers a simple solution to this lack of public accountability. It is the logical next step. It will bring Oregon in line with other states that race dogs. It will make disposition records readily available to the public. And it will accomplish both of these goals easily and without additional cost to the state. Thank you. I'll be available to answer any questions.
Well, Ms. Treadlin, I guess the obvious question is, they do this in Massachusetts. We know that here 800 to 1,000 dogs leave the racetrack at the end of the racing season. How many is that in Massachusetts? How many dogs do they have at the end of the racing season, and what do the records show in terms of how they're disposed of?
There's actually, I can answer that real briefly. There's actually two tracks.
Keep your name, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Connie Teal, Oregon Affairs Greyhounds Director. Sorry about that. Chair, that there's two tracks out there, actually, and there's a much larger number of dogs, and we really haven't been able to figure out the numbers yet because we just recently got all the records for about the last year and a half. So we're still going over those records to find out what those answers are.
So you got records from whom?
From Massachusetts.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see. Okay.
And in further response to that question, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, one of the attachments to my testimony is a copy of the form used by the Massachusetts Racing Commission. And because this bill before you today is patterned after and is almost identical to the Massachusetts bill, this is the form that would work in this state if this bill were to pass.
Right, I understand that. I guess I was kind of curious about the method of disposition, if what you knew or didn't know about it. Okay. Do you have any questions?
Oh, let's wait. That's fine. I do have some.
Chair Corcoran, Senator Starr, Senator Walker, thank you for the honor of letting me talk in front of you today. I really appreciate it. I'm so glad that Oregon is such an open state that we can come down here and view our viewpoints. I work at the phone company full-time, and I'm on vacation day, so it means a lot to have citizens come down here and talk to you, so I appreciate that. I'm the director of Oregon Defenders of Greyhounds, and I'm just here to urge you to vote a yes vote on Senate Bill 830. We believe that standardized records all across the nation in all the 16 states that still allow dog racing will enable us to track the dogs and find out what's happening to these dogs. The track does get certain subsidies from the state, and so we believe that as such they should definitely have full accounting to the public who, you know, pays these subsidies. And we also believe that the movement of these racing dogs will allow us to track certain diseases that goes across the nation. When dogs leave this track here, a dog can actually be bred in Oregon, they can race in Massachusetts, they can race in Florida, and they can end up being killed in some other state. It's a very transitory sport. And so our hope is that every state would have standardized, just like this Massachusetts form, records that we can check. And there is a big outbreak across the country of some diseases. In particular, right now we're having a big outbreak of excuse me right now here. distemper, excuse me, I'm sorry, sir, distemper right now, and there's been huge other outbreaks also of diseases, and this would allow us to track these diseases and see where, what's happening with these dogs to protect humans as well as non-humans. We think it's very, very important. This bill would also allow for penalties for falsifying the records. This is an important incentive to keep abuses from occurring. What cannot be disputed is that thousands of dogs every year do die that are the discards of the racing industry, and they can't race any longer. And even the racing industry itself admits that many, many thousands of dogs die every year, and you cannot dispute that. And we'd just like to say that the privacy issue is well addressed in our bill. Private individuals, such as individual dog owners, are not required to complete or submit disposition records or injury forms. This is entirely the responsibility of the licensees, such as the state licensed adoption groups, state licensed track, or state licensed breeding farms. And we just want to say that the bill would track dogs that move from track to track, track to adoption group, or track to other track, or to a breeding farm, not personal people who adopt the dogs. We're not interested in that. We feel that our bill is a moderate, modest measure that will help to ensure the integrity of dog racing in Oregon. And we hope that you will think of all these points. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Senator Starr, you had a question?
Yeah.
Over here.
That's right.
A couple of things. Is there a belief here that up to 800 dogs in Oregon are being abused somehow? Is that why we have this bill? I'm just trying to figure out the problem that exists here that we're trying to solve with this bill.
Senator Starr, members of the committee, we are not suggesting that 800 or so dogs are being abused. No, we don't know what happens to them, and that's our issue. It's an accountability issue in our mind that Oregon taxpayers who indirectly support the racetrack need to have information as to the racetrack's operations, and that includes what happens to the dogs at the end of the racing season.
Okay. And Oregon taxpayers support the Greyhound Racing House, so.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, there are three ways in which the racetrack receives a state subsidy of sorts. Number one, all aspects of Greyhound racing are considered an appropriate use of exclusive farmland. And so the Greyhound industry gets the benefit of a lower property tax rate that is not enjoyed by other commercial or industrial use of the land. Secondly, there is a pari-mutuel tax that is extracted from every wager made at the racetrack, and that tax, the tax from that pari-mutuel is reverts back to the Oregon Racing Commission to fund their activities. That tax amount has gone down from 6.8% to 1.6% today, and so the state is has been forfeiting that additional money by progressively lowering the pari-mutuel tax rate applied to the racetrack. And then the third and probably most important tax break that the racetrack gets is the fact that Chapter 462 specifically exempts the racetrack operations from paying any that the pari-mutuel tax is in lieu of any other state, county, municipal tax that may attach to their activities. And so they, again, enjoy some tax benefits that aren't available to other non-gambling business operations.
Yeah, thank you. You mentioned that there's a loophole. It's a public records loophole. Is that really what we're trying to close, is that loophole in the public records?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, we're trying to correct a problem that exists because of two situations. Number one, the type of records that are collected are determined by the Racing Commission rather than this body, the legislature. And number two, because of the first fact, the public records law allows the agency that is custodian of the records to make the determination as to whether to exempt the disclosure of those records.
Okay. I just have two more questions, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Starr.
In the bill, you asked that the that within 10 days after the disposition of a greyhound, the owner file the form with the commission. It's on page 2, section 3 of the bill. You say that the owner has to sign that disposition form either in the presence of one of the commission members or a member of the notary public. What's the purpose of that? And how readily available are members of the Racing Commission to come and watch them sign a bunch of disposition forms?
32.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, while Ms. Julin is looking at that, I can answer that a little bit, because we did have that discussion when we were drafting the bill, and it was agreed that we wanted more than just someone stating on the form that, yes, this is where the dog went. We want it under penalty of perjury so that we can be assured that it's an honest statement. Also, most folks are at the track. So that's why we allowed for a member of the Racing Commission or a notary to do
so,
that.
Mr. Chair, so members of the Racing Commission are at the track on a daily basis? Or?
Yes.
Okay. And then one last thing. Why do we need to keep the records for 7 years?
That's 49 years in dog years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Is there a reason why we keep the records for? I mean, do dogs, is that based on the average length of life of the dog, or the useful running life of the dog, or is seven a magic number?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I'm going to defer to Ms. Keel.
I think it's important to get a good members of the committee, Senator Starr, Senator Corcoran. I think it's important to keep these records for quite a while, just so we can get a handle on where these dogs are going, what's happening to them. And 7 years is racing dogs. A lot of them don't even live to be seven. A lot of them are put down before that age. But, yeah, we think that 7 years would be a good time for us to be able to get a handle on where all the dogs are going, what's happening with the dogs, et cetera. So that's pretty much the reason we put 7 years on there.
How many dogs get adopted through the adoption program each year?
Senator Corcoran, Chair Corcoran, we believe that it's about 250 to 350 dogs every season. So it's a good amount. It is a good adoption program, and we're happy they get adopted. We're very, very happy. What we're worried about is the ones that don't get adopted that leave there and that go to other places. There was some pretty horrible things in the news recently. 3,000 dead greyhounds were found on a farm in Alabama. And we cannot be sure, but a lot of those dogs must have come from Oregon, raised in Oregon, and went down there, because a lot of the dogs here leave to go to Florida. And this man had been killing these dogs since he was in his 20s, and he's 69 years old. And he had just a graveyard of dogs in his yard. And so we're hoping that our modest bill and the modest bill in other states will help to make this not happen anymore and to prevent this in the future.
I have a good friend who's adopted two of them, and we named them both Statue because they don't move. Anyway, I don't know what's up with that. But, okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? No? Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And now we have Stephen Walters and Larry L. Campbell, not to be confused with any other Campbells in the building. Larry L. Campbell. That's. I was hoping we wouldn't have two lobbyists at once, but if you insist, that's fine.
Mr. Chairman, I never insist on something
that you do. Yeah. There's always a first, huh? Welcome.
Thank you. Chairman Karpka and members of the committee, my name is Stephen Walters. I'm the chair of the Oregon Racing Commission. I've held that position for 10 years, been on the commission for 12. With me is Jody Hansen, who is the newly appointed executive director of the Oregon Racing Commission. She's been on the job just about a week, succeeding a director we've had for 17 years. But we are appearing today in opposition to Senate Bill 830. We just learned about this hearing this morning and apologize we didn't have the opportunity to present written testimony, but would like the opportunity to supplement the record if we may.
That'll be fine, yeah.
Thank you. Briefly, we simply would observe that Senate Bill 830 is not necessary. As has already been discussed, the Oregon Racing Commission has rules and has had rules for a number of years requiring kennel owners to submit disposition reports on every greyhound that races at Multnomah Kennel Park or Multnomah Greyhound Park, and they are done. That happens at the end of every race meet. The disposition reports are filed 7 days before the greyhound leaves the premises. If the disposition report is not filed, the greyhound's papers are not released, which prevents it from racing or being sent someplace else. We track the disposition of every greyhound that races at Multnomah Greyhound Park. And I was glad to hear the example of the horrific incident that occurred in Alabama where a man ran a slaughterhouse, basically, for greyhounds. I read about that incident in the newspaper. I immediately contacted Multnomah Greyhound Park and the Racing Commission officials and said, were there any greyhounds from Oregon that were killed on that small island in Alabama, and was told that no, we have tracked all of our greyhounds, and none of our greyhounds were killed in this slaughter operation. So we have a system that works. It has worked for quite some time, and we don't see the need for that part of this rule. With respect to injury reports, which is the other provision of this bill, the Racing Commission, by rule, requires injury reports on every greyhound that is injured during racing or while it is on the grounds at Multnomah Greyhound Park. And the greyhounds are brought at the beginning of the racing season, are required to stay the full racing season unless they get a release in the meantime. So they are carefully monitored and carefully tracked during the time that they're present at Multnomah Greyhound Park. So again, we have injury reports. We require them. We monitor them very carefully. Now, having said all this, I want to be clear that we are open to suggestions, to ideas about ways we could do our job better in ensuring the welfare and the safety of racing animals, of individuals at the racetrack, for ensuring the integrity of the sport. I met with Ms. Penny Trulin about 3 weeks to a month ago, and she was very, very graciously presenting us with a copy or a draft of the bill they had prepared and offering to discuss it with us. We discussed with her at that time that we do have rules on this subject. We review our greyhound rules annually, and we do, in fact, have a hearing scheduled for Thursday of next week to hear proposed changes to the greyhound rules. And I invited her at that time that, you know, if you think that there's information we aren't collecting that we should be collecting, please submit your proposal as a rule. She has done so, and her the proposals that you have in your Senate bill are before us now as proposed changes to the rules. We will hold hearings on that. We will determine whether there is information that we are not collecting than we should collect, and if there is, we will change our rules to incorporate that information. I can give you an example. Ms. Trulin discussed the fact on injury reports that now we do not collect the weather at the time the dog was injured. It is certainly is plausible that track conditions could affect greyhound injuries, and so that if we saw a pattern that because during certain types of weather, extremely wet weather, extremely hot weather, we were experiencing more injuries, that is something that you would want to know. That is a change that makes sense to me to make to our injury report forms, and we would be very happy to adopt that type of change. Now, I would also like to address the question of public access to these records. They are subject to the Public Records Act. We have had Public Records Act requests from a variety of organizations to produce these records. We have responded to them as required under the Public Records Act. We have asked for deposits to cover the cost of copying, which is substantial, and we have also asked what they plan to use the information, the personal identifying information for, to determine whether or not there is a personal privacy exemption, which is provided for in the Public Records Act for that type of information. We first asked, would you agree to redacting personally identified information? Because when we've had requests in the past for information from groups such as Oregon Defenders of Greyhounds and related groups, they have agreed to redact personal identifying information. This time they said, no, we don't agree to do that, and we asked, then, as we were advised by our Assistant Attorney General, well, what do you plan to use the information for? So can we determine whether or not this exemption applies? We were responding to the Public Records Act request. We will make the records available. We simply are following the advice of our Assistant Attorney General to determine whether there is an exemption there that should be asserted. So, again, I would suggest to the committee that this is not a bill that you need to enact in Oregon, that the Racing Commission requires this type of information, monitors this type of information, is very serious about tracking our greyhounds and making sure that their welfare is provided for. If there are ways that we can do it better, we will be glad to do it. And again, we have a rules hearing a week from Thursday where we're going to consider those very issues. I could talk a little bit about the suggestion that the state of Oregon is subsidizing racing in Oregon. I would respectfully disagree and suggest it is the contrary. The Oregon Racing Commission is a self-funded agency. We actually return money to the general fund. The tax rates have been reduced over the year from a very, very high rate to a lower rate because of the struggles of the industry, but still the industry more than pays for its own regulation. They pay income taxes, they pay property taxes, and I don't believe it is correct to say that there is a subsidy of racing here in Oregon. But I think that's a minor point. The issue is whether you need this bill and need to put this into law, and I respectfully suggest you don't. We have many, many, many rules to provide for the health and safety of greyhounds, of horses, of individuals involved in racing, and we think it's a very bad precedent to begin enacting selected ones into law. I'd be glad to answer questions that any members of the committee has.
Mr. Walters, I have a couple of questions. One is, I guess I'm not hearing in your testimony what the commission utilizes the information for.
To track the greyhounds, Chair Corcoran, to track where they go. So we know which ones have been adopted, which ones have been sent to race. One of the pieces of information that's asked for in this bill is the greyhound being euthanized? And we track that information as well. In Oregon, we have a rule that says, which we call, I'm afraid it's called the no-kill rule. It's not very elegant, but that it is no greyhound that races in Oregon can be euthanized except if it's in the best interests of the greyhound as diagnosed by a veterinarian. Then we get the name of the veterinarian who is performing the procedure and the reasons for the euthanization. So, I mean, if it's horse season now. If the greyhound is severely injured or contracts a disease or something of that sort, and a veterinarian says yes for the well-being of this animal, then we are able to track that. But every greyhound is tracked at the end of the meet. We know the racetracks they've gone to. We know which ones have been put up for adoption. Some greyhounds have been euthanized, and I think in the records I saw for was it 99? It was some records requested in this Public Records Act request. I think we saw one that had been euthanized and it had cancer.
Okay. And you said something about they have to turn in this report a week before the season ends?
It's a week before the greyhound leaves the premises.
Okay.
That means it's at least before, 7 days before the end of the race meet. The rule reads within 7 days prior to the end of the race meet, within 7 days of the greyhound's removal from racing at the race meet, if prior to the season's end.
So then if under these categories that the Massachusetts Commission uses, relocated to another track, you'd probably be able to track that pretty easily. Return to owner, you'd have no control over euthanization at that point, right?
If it's been returned to an owner, no. I mean, just like we don't have control over whether or not a homeowner or someone in Portland euthanizes their pet.
And retired from breeding, I would say you'd have the same deal. If it's returned to an owner, you don't really have control over the...
Right. We, again, just as anyone, we have no control over anyone who has a pet from euthanizing that. But we do know that it has been returned to the owner or has been retired for breeding purposes or something. We can track that. And I have to say, excuse me, Chair Corcoran, I have not seen the form that they have from Massachusetts. I would hope that they would submit it as part of the record for our rules hearing next week.
Okay. And, you know, place for adoption, we know what happens there. Sold, donated for research, do you track that?
We have never seen that happen. It's illegal to do it in Oregon. But anybody can lie on a form, I suppose, but we check to see what happened to the greyhound, and if the greyhound is not where they said it was, we find out what happened to it.
Other questions, Senator Starr?
Yeah, I threw my pin at you.
Yeah. Was it something I said?
Yeah. Question, how long do you keep the records?
I'm afraid I can't answer that, Senator Chair Corcoran, Senator Starr. However long it is required by the Public Records Act, we started this record collection, thank you, in 1999, and we have all of those records going back that far.
Further question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
The bill requires either a member of the commission or a notary public to be there when the owner would sign the form. Would that cause a hassle or a problem?
Chair Corker and Senator Starr, I think it would, in the sense that yes, our employees are at the racetrack every day during the racing season, but that would mean we would have to divert them from their normal duties to be present for signing of disposition reports. And again, I don't see the purpose of that requirement, because we do track the greyhounds. The information is taken and we track them. And if the greyhound is not where the form represents it will be, we take disciplinary action against the licensee.
One final question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
If this bill were to be enacted, would you anticipate that the fees that you charge to the owners of these dogs to allow them to race, I guess it's a 1.6% tax of some kind, maybe that's the betting tax or whatever, would you anticipate that would have to be raised in order to accommodate the new mandates in this bill?
Senator Corcoran, Senator Starr, that wouldn't affect the tax rate. The tax rate is set by statute, and that is on the amount wagered at the greyhound track. What it would do is increase the costs. It would increase the costs to the racing commission, so we would return less to the general fund. Then if it's required for a notary public wouldn't do that for free. At least that's my experience as a practicing lawyer, and so it would increase the costs either to the greyhound owners, the kennel owners, or to the racetrack, and someone's going to have to absorb that cost.
Thank you.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have questions to follow up on that. Mr. Walters, I spoke to the racing commissioner in Massachusetts this morning. I don't understand how they can do it for free, and you seem to think it will drive up costs. Do you have a response?
Senator Corcoran, Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, I said if there is a, I believe I said, if there is a... a requirement of a notary. A notary will charge, and someone will have to bear that cost. It will require additional employee time. Whether that would require us to hire additional employees, I can't say whether or not the Racing Commission would be required to hire additional employees. I'm certain it would divert Commission employees from their other duties out there, either whether it's at a vet or an investigator or someone of that sort. I certainly wouldn't suggest I could put a dollar figure on it, but I think it would be an added burden to the Racing Commission or to the licensees or to the race meet to do it in that way.
Can I just ask a series of questions,
sure.
Mr. Sheriff? Thank you. So you have a form that you track the dogs with currently?
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, yes, we do.
You've developed that by rule.
We've developed it pursuant to rule.
Mm-hmm.
The rule requires a form. We have developed a form.
Right. So currently you don't require any employee time to fill out the form. Could you explain to me how the form is filled out and who gets it and how we know what they've put on there is accurate?
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, the form is filled out by the kennel owner, who is, and this is a responsibility of the kennel owner in OAR 462-140-0420. The kennel owner fills out the form and provides it to the Board of Judges, who are Racing Commission employees. The Board of Judges actually they delegate the task to the Director of Racing at Multnomah Greyhound Park, who now is named Julie Delkamp. She goes through the process of takes those forms and tracks every one of those greyhounds based on the information on the form and confirms it's a burdensome process, and she goes through it very carefully and accounts for the whereabouts of every one of those greyhounds. Respectfully, I would submit that having someone file it under penalty of perjury in the presence of a commission employee or a notary public won't add to the process at all, because to get truly accurate information and to understand what happened to the greyhounds, which is what we are trying to do, we would still have to track each one of the greyhounds. And if there is misinformation on the report, we will discipline the kennel owner who filled out an inaccurate report.
That brings up my next question, because the requirement to require it be done in front of under penalty of perjury is so that we can appropriately penalize them for failing to do so. So are you telling me that you have a disciplinary action that you implement already?
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, we can take disciplinary action against the person's license. The kennel owner is a licensee of the Oregon Racing Commission. If we take action against that person's license, they can't race not only in Oregon but nowhere else in the country.
I see. Okay. The other question I had was, are you familiar with the Floyd case, from Ron Floyd, from May of 2002?
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, I am very familiar with that case.
I thought you might be. I have quite a packet on that case.
I'd be delighted to answer any questions you have about the case.
Good, because I actually have one that's really confusing to me, and I'm just not sure what your answer is going to be, so I'm going to ask that question if I might. I have a letter here that was sent to Mr. Teal, Gary Teal, from Carol Morgan of the Racing Commission, that said there were no photographs taken as part of the investigation of the death of this dog belonging to Mr. Floyd, that some pictures were taken on a personal video camera. However, that film was subsequently taped over when it was determined that Mr. Floyd was going to sign a waiver for a hearing before the Board of Judges. Yet, when I look back in some of the other materials in the investigative form, it says, Upon returning, I began to document the scene by photographing the inside of the shelter. Yet, when Mr. Teal asked for photographs, he was told there were none. And I'd like to know who was taking the personal video camera. Do you normally have investigators that use a personal video camera when you're investigating these things? And the reason I'm asking these questions, Mr. Walters, is not because this is a thick file on this one particular case. But I just want to make sure that when you tell us that you're tracking the dogs and you're keeping good records, maybe you can explain some of the investigative practices.
Sure. Senator Walker, first of all, the Ron Floyd case had nothing to do with this issue of dispositions and tracking the greyhounds. This was an incident where the Racing Commission received a report that at Mr. Floyd's farm, and as you know, the Racing Commission licenses breeding farms in Oregon as well, inspects them periodically, requires them to keep records of things such as vaccinations and that type of thing. There was a report that a greyhound who was a female greyhound who was there for breeding purposes and I believe had been retired from racing from some considerable period of time, had been killed by some sort of an animal. The investigators went to investigate it. My understanding is that one of the investigators used a personal camera to document what they had found. After they had documented what they had found, Mr. Floyd voluntarily relinquished his license, his farm license. Mr. Floyd, for other reasons, had his owner's and trainer's licenses revoked by the Racing Commission a few years before, but continued to be licensed as a greyhound farm. When Mr. Floyd relinquished that license, which meant he had no more licenses with the Racing Commission, my understanding is that Investigator Swanland taped over those photographs because there was no need for them anymore in connection with the investigation. And the injuries to the greyhound were thoroughly documented in the reports, and I believe there was a veterinary examination of the greyhound as well. So that is what happened in that incident.
So even though he said there were no photographs taken, there were photographs taken and they were destroyed because the case was no longer under your jurisdiction, is what you were saying?
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, I'm sorry, I haven't seen Ms. Morgan's letter. She said no. I assume what she was referring to, that there were no sort of official photographs that were made as part of the file. When she said it was taken, it may have been a poor choice of words. The situation is as I described it. Investigator Swanland investigated the incident, took some photographs. When there was no longer any investigation going on and the license was surrendered and the case was over, he taped over the pictures that he had taken. But again, the injuries to the greyhound were thoroughly investigated, and there was a veterinary report on them as well.
Would someone who lost their license be able to reapply after a certain period of time?
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, yes. They can after a period of at least 2 years. And frankly, Mr. Floyd was in the process of trying to reapply for his owner's and trainer's license was rejected for that as well. I can tell you that, for example, we had a case when I first got on the Racing Commission over about 11 years ago, where a greyhound trainer was found using a live lure, a live rabbit, to train greyhounds. We have a rule against that. We take it very seriously. His license was revoked. Actually, there were two trainers. They were revoked. They have reapplied several times, and they never have been reinstated.
Okay, and thank you for that comment, because I'm sitting here a little bit stunned. I work in a court system, and you don't necessarily destroy evidence just because the case has gone away, particularly if they can reapply in 2 years. It seems like you would want that. But my other question to you is, and I just have two more. In Oregon, you state you have a no-kill policy. But if we have approximately 800 dogs that we can't find homes for in the state of Oregon, you return those to the owners, or how do you dispose of them?
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, the 800 dogs I believe they were referring to, a our adoption agencies place, I believe the numbers are over 200 to 300 greyhounds a year. That is of the 1,000 greyhounds that race at Multnomah Greyhound Park in a season. I don't know that those 200 to 300 are subtracted from that number. The adoption program is constantly trying to place dogs, and in fact our adoption program is so excellent and so widely known that racetracks from other places in the country send greyhounds to be placed through Oregon's adoption kennels. But with the 800 to 900, however many, are not placed for adoption, the individual, and I say right now her name is Julie Delcamp, the director of racing at Multnomah Greyhound Park, takes the disposition reports and calls the racetrack. Make sure that greyhound, if it says it has gone to a racetrack, make sure the dog is there. Calls the owner, if it has been returned to the owner, make sure the greyhound is there. If there is a report that the dog has been euthanized, as I gave the example of the greyhound who had cancer, she will call the veterinarian to make sure that is who has to be listed, to make sure that is the case, and find out the disposition of the greyhound. And she does that for every one of the greyhounds that has raced at Multnomah Greyhound Park.
And my final question, Mr. Chair, thank you for indulging me, is since 1999, when you implemented the administrative rules, have you noticed a difference in your ability to maintain accurate records and ensure the safety and welfare of your dogs?
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, I'm not entirely clear as to what you're asking, but I think, if we weren't tracking the disposition before, we wouldn't necessarily know the disposition. Now that we are tracking the disposition, we don't know whether it's different than it was before. But what we can say is that we have a very good handle on the disposition of these greyhounds. And again, the horrific incident in Alabama is a good example of that. We were able to confirm within a week that no Multnomah Greyhound Park greyhounds were involved.
And you simply want to do this by administrative rule and not put it in statute.
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, as I said, we have rule after rule after rule relating to the health and safety of racing animals and greyhounds and individuals. The disposition reports only are the tip of the iceberg. We have detailed rules about transportation of greyhounds. We have detailed rules about medication of greyhounds. We have detailed rules about the care and welfare of greyhounds. We have similar rules about horses. We have similar rules about jockeys. We have similar rules about what trainers must do. They go on and on and on. I think it would be very unfortunate if we began picking a few of these rules and starting enacting them into statute, which would create, in my view, a confusing regulatory environment, but also remove the flexibility of the Racing Commission to adapt its rules to reflect better information. For example, if we had enacted an injury report rule that didn't track weather conditions, and now think it's a good idea to include weather conditions in our injury reports, having to change a statute would be much more difficult than changing a rule. So I think it would, again, very respectfully, I submit that the Racing Commission has a wide body of knowledge on these issues, is taking its job very seriously, and we think we are the best ones to make these decisions rather than taking selected ones and putting them in a statute.
Thank you, Mr. Walters. I really appreciate you being so patient with my questions.
Thank you. I appreciate your question, Senator Walker.
Very much. I think that'll do her.
Thank you, Senator Corcoran.
Thanks for coming. Now we'll go from the sublime to the ridiculous.
I'll sit on Larry's lap.
Everybody's to Larry's left, Mr. Romaine. Everybody.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Larry Campbell, representing Magna Entertainment, which operates the Multnomah Greyhound Park. By the way, I'd like to say that this is well-meaning legislation, and it probably is something that would be very appropriate in many states. But in our case, the proposed addition to the statute are redundant to the ORC rules and the MGP, Multnomah Greyhound Park, policies that are already in place regarding relocation information for our greyhounds. The racing industry here in Oregon realized many years ago that the relocation or disposition of greyhounds was an issue that needed to be addressed. We began with gathering information on greyhound destinations in the early 1990s, and throughout the middle 1990s we progressed to performing random spot checks for verification of reports. Currently, Multnomah Greyhound Park gathers and compiles required information similar to that that's in the proposed language on the destination of greyhounds leaving racetracks. We then go one step further than the proposed language and verify that the greyhounds reach their designated destinations. If confirmation is not received from the designated destination, contact is made with each greyhound owner to verify location. It's time-consuming. It's a very time-consuming process encompassing many phases, but one we're committed to make and that we committed to make 3 years ago. We had 100% reporting verification for the year 2000 and 2001, and we're well on the way to that same goal for our 2002 Greyhound racing meet. The actual relocation data is kept on file at the park, and a summary is forwarded to the Oregon Racing Commission. If the Board of Judges or the Commission requires specific information, Multnomah Greyhound has it readily available. Though we do not keep records for 7 years at this point in time, we are, as the proposed bill requests, we do have relocation information on file for the last 3 years. Language contained in the ORC rules relating to relocation reporting is reviewed and refined on a yearly basis, and I think Mr. Walters made comment to the fact that they're in that process at the present time. Cooperation with this program, while enforced by the Oregon Racing Commission, is aided by the eventual understanding of the reporting agent and their verification the information provided will not be used for further misconceptions about the Greyhound community. They're also comfortable in the fact that dissemination of personal information provided is done in such a way as to safeguard their businesses and their personal lives from disruption. As a matter of fact, once the Greyhound Farms owners were assured of their privacy, we were able to get information much easier. Each year that the Oregon Racing Commission has hosted the Judges and Stewards Accreditation Program, we've made presentations on our relocation and adoption programs to try and further our philosophies within the industry, and they seem to be working. The American Greyhound Council, which operates under the umbrella of the National Greyhound Association, has drafted a policy of relocation reporting that closely resembles ours. And recently, as recently as last December, we've had inquiries from other racetracks as to how we go about tracking our dogs and the forms we use. By Oregon Racing Commission rule, every greyhound that ends their breeding careers here in Oregon and will not be kept as pets by the owner must be placed through our adoption program. So the Oregon dogs are all in the adoption program, which, by the way, I've had an opportunity to go out and actually view, and it's very interesting. There are three groups that place the dogs, and if you want to adopt one of these dogs, you will have a home visit, much the same as if you were going to adopt a child. The program is supported by the Multnomah Greyhound Park, the Oregon Greyhound Association, the Oregon Greyhound Breeders Association, and the three endorsed volunteer adoption groups I mentioned. Organizations involved in the adoption process have established a structured reporting system that is agreeable to all. Built into the system, at the adoption group's request, is a policy of not publishing the names, addresses of person adopting the greyhounds. When it comes to injury reporting, the Oregon Racing Commission veterinarian keeps all injury information on file in his office, and I do believe that it is presented in summary form to the Commission on a regular basis. Much of the information detailed in the proposed language is included in this data. As for euthanasia rate data, regarding our racing greyhounds, this information is forwarded in our summary to the Commission. Due to the above-mentioned programs, euthanization of greyhounds due to racing-related injuries is a rare occurrence in Oregon. For each year, we've been keeping detailed records and performed comprehensive follow-up. Of interest would be the survey sampling of euthanasia rate in the general population of privately owned dogs to see if there's a similarity. Only a certified doctor of veterinary medicine performs euthanasia after extensive examination and evaluation, and generally after consultation with the board of judges. We even take it one step further and require every greyhound that expires while under the jurisdiction of the racing commission is reported within 24 hours. Traditionally, penalties for violating ORC rules have been left to the Board of Judges and, upon appeal, an impartial hearing officer and the Oregon Racing Commission. These are knowledgeable entities with a clear understanding of the legalities and the logistics of the racing industry. This year, we did have a kennel owner or trainer who violated the ORC rules regarding timely relocation reporting. This and the other violations resulted in a 365-day suspension of his racing-related license, which is reciprocal throughout the country, and fines of over $1,000. I then, in my written documentation, indicated the Oregon Racing Commission rules that directly relate to the proposed bill that you can refer to at your leisure. As you see, Oregon's greyhound racing community has long been concerned about the welfare of our athletes. We continually attempt to anticipate situations and formulate new programs to ensure the health of our greyhounds and the industry itself. And we do oppose the bill, Mr. Chairman. And in addition, I have statements from Homes for Hounds, which I will provide to you. And also, we have a letter from the Greyhound Pets of America. And
thank you, Larry. Any questions, Larry?
I just have, as
Senator Starr,
has Mr. Romaine testified?
Mr. Romaine has not testified.
We'll let Mr. Romaine testify, and then I'll
go forward, Mr. Romaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm here representing the Oregon Greyhound Association. And we are in opposition to the bill. I will not go over the testimony. I'm not going to give you any new testimony because everybody else has really covered this. I do want to emphasize just a couple of things. The reason that you have commissions is because the legislature doesn't have the time nor the inclination nor the ability really to regulate something on a regular daily basis. The reason you have commissions is to provide flexibility in regulation. And Mr. Walters, chair of the Racing Commission, gave you that example of the ability to change something if a good idea comes up, or if a bad idea is out there and you want to get rid of it. You have considerably more flexibility, and that's what the Racing Commission gives to you. It was very interesting, but in the beginning the statement was made that we really don't have a lot of problems in Oregon. But that's actually very correct. We don't have problems because the industry has taken it upon itself to look after this, to put up the best adoption program that's available in the United States. We did this here in Oregon. We did it through and with the Racing Commission. We want to continue to work with them. We urge you to not pass Senate Bill 830. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Romaine. Senator Starr, do you have a question?
Yeah, just one. If the bill were to pass, that has some pretty I think, onerous penalties in the bill of $2,500 and for an aggravated offense, $5,000. I'd like you to compare that penalty versus the penalty that was assessed to the gentleman or the firm or whoever it was that was prohibited from racing for 365 days.
Senator Starr, we choose to take the proponents of this bill at their word, and that what they're really interested in is protecting greyhounds. But one of our concerns is the very thing that you've just raised, because if greyhound breeders from outside the state refuse to come into the state, refuse to bring their dogs into the state because of onerous laws, we very well could lose the entire greyhound racing industry. And there are some folks in the state that would like to see that happen. We, of course, are not among them.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Well, just one.
Senator Walker?
Yeah, thank you. Just one in response to that, Mr. Campbell, because no one has anything to fear if they abide by the law and do things legally. Correct?
Well, I would say that a reporting system of this complication, it depends on who's doing the reporting, as you well recognize. But this doesn't give you the latitude of being late or making a mistake. This basically is, as the senator has pointed out, is a very, very quick response. And it's a very onerous response.
If I might just comment one on Senator Starr's question, Mr. Chair. To a kennel owner, the fact that you have been, your ability to race here in Oregon, which also means you can't race anyplace else, has been taken away, is really the onerous thing. We do that. And sometimes somebody will deserve it. That they will always deserve it if our racing commission does it to them. But that's the real penalty, the inability to, in effect, do your earn your livelihood during that period of time.
That brings up one more question.
Senator Walker.
I'm sorry. Mr. Romaine, you brought up a good point. When Mr. Campbell mentioned a while ago that if you're the one guy got a one-year suspension, why is that true with every state that has dog racing, that if you are suspended in one state, you're automatically prohibited from racing in another state, or is that only Oregon's law?
We're getting some nods back from the commission.
I believe I can feel the nods back there, so I'm going to step out in front and say, and Steve can shoot me if he wants to, because I've known him for a gazillion years, but I believe that if you're suspended in one state, you will be suspended in the state of Oregon, and I think that's pretty much universal for the racing states.
Okay. Great. Thank you. I appreciate the testimony today.
Thank you. I guess, you know, Mr. Walters, the one point I guess I would make is that when I was approached by the proponents of this bill, I got the sense that they had a genuine, you know, concern for the well-being of the greyhounds, and it would seem to me that you would have some mechanism to try to share the data that you've been compiling in a non-onerous way. I mean, I understand that under, you know, if you present a FOIA and you've got a, you know, charge for each document that in itself can be prohibitive, I would assume. But, you know, I would hope, you said you have rulemaking coming up, I would hope that you would listen to the advocates. I think their interest is well founded, and ostensibly as a public member of the commission, you'd have the same interests. So to the extent that you guys can give each other some help, that would probably keep this from coming before us.
Thank you, Chair Corcoran, and that's what we've been trying to do. That's again, I appreciate the opportunity to meet with Ms. Trulin and, you know, discuss these issues with her and invited them to participate in our rulemaking process as they are doing. We also offered to make available to them examples of the disposition reports. We've already given them many copies of injury reports and that type of thing. It was after the meeting with Ms. Trulin that we got two Public Records Act requests from her organization, then from another organization. The first one asked for 4 years of records. The other one asked for a year of disposition reports. And, you know, because of the cost to the agency of doing with that, we treated them as they were presented to us as Public Records Act requests and followed the procedures to respond to those. But we have shared information with them more informally in the past, and we'd be delighted to do that in the future, and certainly welcome their participation in our rulemaking process.
I think it would be helpful if your commission, I mean, through your staff, and was able to produce at least some sort of rudimentary overview of what you've determined since 1999, that I think would probably maybe get some people either more comfortable or, obviously on the other hand, raise serious questions that they'd have that we can explore.
Thank you, Senator. We have summaries that we I think we offered to provide them that would show here's what where the greyhounds have gone and in the various categories, and we certainly will be glad to continue that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Okay, with that, we'll close public hearing, and we're adjourned. Thank you.